Welcome to this episode of Physicians Weekly Podcast. My name is Dr. Rachel Giles from Medical Medical Publishers in collaboration with Physicians Weekly.
Welcome to Physicians Weekly.
What's a three-letter word for heartburn relief? That's easy. TIF, the TIF procedure. The TIF procedure gives physicians a better option for treating chronic heartburn by reconstructing the body's natural barrier to reflux. No pain, no pills, no scar either, because the TIF procedure does not involve an incision. It's time to learn more about this innovative approach to treating chronic acid reflux and heartburn. To learn more about how the TIF procedure may be able to help your patients get back to living life on their own terms, visit endogastricsolutions.com. The TIF procedure may or may not be appropriate for your health condition. Only your doctor can explain the benefits and risks of all treatment options. Results may vary. Visit GERDHelp.com for more clinical data. The TIF procedure for reflux was developed by Endogastric Solutions, Inc., which may have co-founded this marketing material.
The Physicians Weekly podcast provides thought leader insights on the latest medical news, clinical trial coverage, and advances in medicine and healthcare.
Gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, is a common reason for American adults to see a gastroenterologist, and it's the leading indication for upper endoscopy. In addition to its impact on quality of life, chronic GERD is a risk factor for numerous adverse events, such as esophageal stricture formation, Barrett's metaplasia, and esophageal adenocarcinoma, thus necessitating adequate diagnosis and treatment of this common entity. Until recently, proton pump inhibitors, PPIs, were deemed the treatment of choice for the majority of individuals with early disease and mild to moderate chronic symptoms, with plenty of study results demonstrating their efficacy. However, researchers estimate that about a quarter of individuals experience a partial or suboptimal response to PPIs for a variety of reasons, including noncompliance and the failure of the drugs to address an underlying incompetent gastroesophageal valve function, which is an anatomical abnormality not corrected by this class of medications. Additionally, although the absolute risk is low, multiple studies have shown an association between long-term PPI use and potential adverse health outcomes. One new advanced alternative offering therapeutic durability is transoral incisionless funduplication, or TIF. TIF is an advanced endoscopy approach to treat GERD without surgery. The goal of TIF is to restore the integrity of the gastroesophageal valve by creating a 270-degree esophagastric wrap around the distal esophagus, anchored by multiple polypropylene fasteners. The procedure is performed through the mouth with no surgical incisions. We interview Dr. Raman Muthusamy of the Medical Director of Endoscopy and Professor at the David Geffen School of Medicine, University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA, in order to find out more about GERD and the use of TIF in practice. Thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Muthusamy. Can you explain why a long-term use of proton pump inhibitors to treat GERD is generally not advised?
Well, I think that proton pump inhibitors over time, there are several concerns that people have. We certainly know that there have been associated with certain conditions such as calcium malabsorption or risk of infections that can potentially affect patients. Secondly, many patients simply don't like to take a medication over the long term. And there's also concerns about drug interactions between the proton pump inhibitors and certain medications, and this could affect the therapeutic levels of those medications as well. And then finally, there are occasionally sometimes side effects associated with individual drugs, which may make some patients reticent to take them or frankly avoid them altogether. So all of these factors can make patients see if there's an alternative to taking these medicines over a long period of time.
Is there long-term data to support the use of PPIs beyond 3, 4, or 5 years?
Well, the FDA approvals for these things were in the short term, but that's just the way the trials were. I think there's clear data to show that they can be used, and I think in general they do far more good than harm, but I do think that we have been very liberal in use of these medications, and in fact now patients can get them over the counter. And so it sort of becomes the default, I have some abdominal pain. Oh, take some of this. You know, it's almost become like the Tylenol for abdominal pain. And unfortunately, many patients get put on these medications and then they just stay on them. And so, you know, certainly we want to ideally target these medications to those who most benefit from them. Because again, while I think they're generally safe, You know, there are some potential concerns and side effects and interactions that make you want to really make sure that you precisely choose the people who most would benefit from them.
What signs should physicians recognize as indicators that alternatives to a medication may be needed in managing patients with GERD?
Now, if a patient has symptoms that are not responding well to a medication, then certainly it may be an indication for additional testing, which could include pH testing to confirm that they, in fact, are complaining of acid reflux. There are some patients who are going to have other symptoms. There's something called functional heartburn, which can, you know, sort of mimic these symptoms, but may not be associated with true gastroesophageal reflux disease or, you know, evidence of acid reflux. And so obviously, these medicines only block the production of acid. So if your problem is more regurgitation, where you say, hey, look, I just don't like the backwash, I don't like the liquid that comes up, and there are other contents within that liquid that comes up from the stomach that can be irritating, such as bile. So it doesn't really do anything for the mechanical barrier. It really just serves to reduce the concentration of acid in the fluid. So if patients are complaining of other symptoms, such as hoarseness or, you know, perhaps even asthma, adults sometimes can be from reflux, other aspects of this. Or if they've, you know, sort of said that, well, my medicine's worked for a while, but they seem to be working less well now. Those may be reasons for consideration of additional testing and perhaps alternative therapies.
Why do you feel endoscopic and minimally invasive surgical approaches to GERD are being increasingly employed?
Well, I think that there's several things. Number one is we are starting to get increasing data. There's several randomized controlled trials for these technologies now that have shown benefit. And we've also seen refinements in these techniques over time. We're also seeing more physicians who are comfortable in performing them. And so I think they're both based on a more solid body of evidence, as well as accessibility and availability, as well as now some longer-term data on durability. These devices seem, you know, being more incorporated into the management algorithm. And I think patients, as I said, sometimes don't want to take medicines long-term for this. They would actually prefer a solution that allows them to come off their medications. And as I said earlier, the reflux, when you take medicines, you don't actually stop the reflux. The reflux occurs. You're just changing the composition of what is refluxing to something that is less irritating. And so if you want to fundamentally solve the problem, you can suggest that doing either a minimally invasive surgical or endoscopic approach would be a truer solution to that problem.
What are some of the current traditional endoscopy and minimally invasive surgical treatments available for GERD? And how does transoral incisionless fundoplication, or TIF, play a role as an alternative treatment?
Obviously, there are traditional surgical surgeries like laparoscopic Nissen fundoplication, and then there are some variations of that procedure that perhaps can be done for people who may have impaired motility, where they can't push the food across the junction if it's too tight. So they may use a wrap that's not as tight or not as complete. So there are variations of that, such as the toupee fundoplication. There's also variant type procedures. So for example, there is a magnetic sphincter augmentation where you put a sort of a magnetic ring around the lower esophageal sphincter, and that's placed surgically. And that's called the Lynx procedure. And then there is transoral incisionless fundoplication, which is an endoscopic technique, which can be done for patients with 2 centimeter or smaller hiatal hernias. If it's larger than that, the surgery needs to be done to repair the hernia. But if it's a small hernia, it can be done entirely endoscopically in a 45-minute procedure or so. And that can serve to mimic surgical wrap. And that procedure in particular has gained some popularity because the traditional Nissen fundoplication that the surgeons perform, which is really a 360-degree wrap, probably provides the tightest wrap, but like many things in life, you want it tight enough, but perhaps not too tight. And so that while it's the tightest, it also has been associated with trouble swallowing sometimes afterwards or difficulty burping. And some people will call that gas bloat. And those are the two most common side effects after many anti-reflux procedures. And it appears, both from the literature as well as my own personal experience as someone who performs TIF, that those side effects are significantly reduced in patients undergoing that procedure. And so that's one reason that many times now we're more inclined, or patients are more inclined, to seek the TIF procedure. Patients should be given the pros and cons of each of these approaches, and that's really what we try to do in our esophageal center, is to provide the full spectrum. And I usually see these patients who are interested in a mechanical solution in conjunction with a surgeon, and we discuss kind of what their goals and aims are. We have an honest discussion about the pros and cons of each approach, and then we decide, let the patient decide based on that information, how they'd like to do it. Our experience now is that in that setting, that many patients are opting to try the transoral incisionless fundoplication because the data seems to be quite promising in terms of alleviating symptoms, eliminating the need for medications, and avoiding the side effects in particular that I mentioned of gas, bloat, and trouble swallowing or dysphagia.
What about other endoscopic approaches? How has that field developed?
I think that we've been trying to provide endoscopic anti-reflux alternatives for 20 years. And there have been a number of endoscopic technologies that have been proposed and have been withdrawn or have failed due to lack of adoption or concerns about efficacy or safety. And so this field, I think there's been a real need for these types of devices. But like many things, when there are two alternatives, in this case, medications and surgery, that are relatively effective, it becomes difficult to compete with them with your first version of your device. And so it's really taken us about 20 years to come up with, you know, some good tried and true techniques. And I'm hopeful that we'll see additional variations and modifications, because we know that there are literally hundreds of millions of people in our country who suffer from GERD on a regular basis, many of whom are probably looking for alternatives to medicines. And as we can provide them with safe and durable and effective techniques, I suspect that the number of folks who choose to, you know, consider these techniques will only grow in the years to come.
Dr. Muthuswamy, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today. That's all the time we have for this podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Stay safe and stay healthy.
If you would like to suggest a topic for discussion or contribute to Physicians Weekly, please email pwpodcast@physiciansweekly.com.